Chinese people will never allow any foreign forces to bully, oppress, or enslave us.
A warning from Xi Jinping. This is Friday, the 2nd of July, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, Chinese students in Australia suffer bullying, harassment, and intimidation from pro-Beijing peers. Hong Kong bans more demonstrations. Cambodia pins its COVID hopes on a vaccination rollout. The U.S. House okays a special select committee to investigate the attack on the U.S. Capitol. A sad discovery at a collapsed Miami-area condo tower. All on today's VOA Asia. China's President Xi Jinping Thursday warned that foreign forces attempting to bully the nation will get their heads bashed and hailed a new world created by its people as the ruling Communist Party marked the centenary of its founding. Reuters' Gloria Tso reports.
As Beijing celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party on Thursday, President Xi Jinping warned foreign forces not to bully his country. In an hour-long address from Tiananmen Square, Xi pledged to bolster China's military, complete reunification with Taiwan, and ensure social stability in Hong Kong. He also vowed to protect and defend Chinese sovereignty from foreign forces.
At the same time, the Chinese people will never allow any foreign forces to bully, oppress, or enslave us. Anyone who dares try to do that will have their heads bashed bloodied against the Great Wall of Steel, forged by over 1.4 billion Chinese people.
Xi's comments were met with fervent applause from the 70,000-member audience and later became the top trending topic on Chinese social media. Under Xi, China has taken a more assertive stance on the global stage. The country has drawn international criticism for its treatment of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang and crackdown on Hong Kong under a sweeping national security law implemented last year. It's also sent fighter jets and bombers to assert its sovereignty claims over democratically ruled Taiwan, whose president Tsai Ing-wen has repeatedly called Taiwan an independent country. While Beijing has never renounced the use of force to bring Taiwan under its control, Xi called for peaceful reunification on Thursday.
All sons and daughters of China, including compatriots from both sides of the Taiwan Strait, must work together and move forward in solidarity, resolutely destroying any Taiwan independence plots.
The Chinese Communist Party now boasts over 95 million members, according to data released on Wednesday.
Gloria Tso reporting. China has seen huge improvements in living standards over the past four decades, accompanied by rising international economic and political heft. However, many experts say that while many countries have benefited from that relationship, China is also seen eroding democracy and human rights in nations over which it holds economic sway. Under Xi, China has also built up its military presence in the South China Sea and engaged in skirmishes with the Indian military along their disputed border. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Report finds Beijing's persecution of Uyghurs reaches nearly 30 countries. Hong Kong pro-democracy activist and human rights lawyer arrested for the second time in less than a month. Myanmar's junta woos Moscow to balance Beijing. U.S. vows to speed up visa processing for Afghans who helped Americans. Hundreds of dead turtles wash ashore in Sri Lanka after a shipwreck of a cargo ship. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and at the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. The international rights group Human Rights Watch says Chinese students in Australia have suffered bullying, harassment, and intimidation from pro-Beijing peers. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
In a report released Wednesday, Human Rights Watch says the impact of a year-long Beijing-imposed national security law restricting freedom of speech in Hong Kong has been felt thousands of kilometres away on Australian university campuses. The non-government organisation has investigated alleged reprisals against those who've spoken out on the political situation in Hong Kong. It interviewed about 50 students and academics about claims of intimidation, harassment and surveillance of Chinese and Hong Kong students in Australia. Its report claims that Chinese students in Australia have faced harassment and surveillance of their activities both on campus and online by pro-China activists. There appears to be no concrete evidence of direct involvement by Chinese authorities. Elaine Pearson, the Australia Director of Human Rights Watch, says a small number of respondents even reported that their families in China have been visited by police.
A lot of the students are really terrified to talk about these issues because of the national security law. But we spoke to about 24 pro-democracy students, and all of them had had experiences of intimidation, harassment, either by their classmates, and in a few cases, a handful of cases, their family members back home were interrogated. And in some cases, they were interrogated if they went back either to Hong Kong or to mainland China.
The Australian government said the Human Rights Watch report raises deeply concerning issues. Education Minister Alan Tudge said in a statement that any interference on our campuses by foreign entities cannot be tolerated. He said Federal Parliament's Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security has already been probing risks to national security in Australian higher education. The Chinese embassy in Canberra dismissed the report as rubbish. A spokesman said Human Rights Watch had decayed into a political tool for the West to attack and smear developing countries. Australian university officials said they were talking with the federal government about addressing freedom of speech and political interference on campuses. Australia's relations with China have deteriorated in recent years because of a long list of diplomatic, strategic, and trade disputes. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Japan's prime minister says it is possible the Olympics will be held without spectators as Samoa withdraws its weightlifting team from the Games, the latest setback for Tokyo's fraught efforts to stage the world's biggest sporting event during a pandemic. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Police in Hong Kong Thursday sealed off Victoria Park, the site of annual rallies calling for democracy on the anniversary of the former British colony's 1997 return to China. The police raised blue flags warning people they could be prosecuted if they enter or remain in the enclosed area, saying there were online calls encouraging people to take part in an unauthorized protest. Liao Ka-Ki, senior superintendent of the Hong Kong Police Force, defended the police restrictions.
It is very important for me to stress that the most effective police measures is to prevent things from happening instead of deal with it after it happened. So the preventive measure in this operations, because of the threat assessment we made, we tend to prevent any unlawful activities from happening in the first place. So that's the most crucial point regarding our police action and deployment.
Beijing imposed a national security law last year as authorities cracked down on dissent in Hong Kong after the territory was rocked by massive anti-government protests in 2019. Critics say Beijing has gone back on a promise to keep special freedoms for 50 years in Hong Kong not given to mainland China. Those freedoms include the autonomy of its courts and legal system, civil liberties that include a free press, freedom of speech and assembly. The national security law banned large-scale demonstrations, and a number of activists and journalists have been arrested, ceased public activities, or have left Hong Kong. Exiled Tibetans living in India protested against China's ruling Communist Party Thursday as it marked the centenary of the party's founding. In New Delhi, people shouted slogans and scuffled with police outside the Chinese embassy. Rin Zin is the name of the director of Students for Free Tibet.
So today marks the 100th anniversary of the founding of CPC, Communist Party of China, which for us is a black day in history. We are here to protest against CCP. But what's happening inside Tibet is they're showcasing this and glorifying this huge propaganda by Chinese Communist government.
Beijing says it peacefully liberated Tibet in 1951 after Chinese troops entered the then country and took over its administration. The Dalai Lama, the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism, fled Tibet in 1959 after a failed uprising against Chinese rule and has since established a government in exile based in Dharamsala, India. You can read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hundreds of protesters took to the streets of Myanmar's biggest city, Yangon, Thursday, setting fire to an army uniform and chanting calls for democracy 5 months after a military coup ousted elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Our thank you to you for being with us on VOA Asia. Amid rising caseloads of coronavirus infections as it emerges from a strict COVID lockdown, Cambodia is pinning its hopes on a vaccination rollout that would help the nation reach herd immunity, even as the nation confronts unique challenges that could hamper that effort. Luke Hunt reports from the Cambodian capital, Phnom Penh.
Cambodia fared well during its first year of the COVID-19 pandemic. But that changed February 20 when, authorities say, two women bribed their way out of quarantine, went out dancing and spread the disease. Since then, the number of confirmed cases has climbed from less than 500 to more than 50,000, with 44,000 recoveries and 602 deaths. On Wednesday, the daily caseload struck a record high of 1,130. Hang Sokhan Tia, an academic and author of I Am a Daughter, a book about female empowerment in Cambodia, says life during the pandemic has been harsh for the poor. She says authorities found it difficult to enforce severe lockdowns, particularly around Phnom Penh's street markets, which were closed, depriving many families of an income.
A lot of the poor family live very close to each other, which is where a lot of the red zone was located. When they live together and then they spread the COVID infected even faster, and without market, without having the living income, they just cannot really make much of the living.
Bradley Merg, a senior advisor to the Cambodian Institute for Cooperation and Peace, says many Cambodians simply do not have the space, security, or access to health services and supermarkets of those in the leafy suburbs of Western cities in countries such as the United States or Australia.
Ultimately, a permanent lockdown or long-term lockdown is simply not a feasible strategy in Cambodia or in Phnom Penh specifically.
However, Cambodia is ranked second after Singapore in its vaccination rollout among the 10 Association of Southeast Asian Nations countries after securing about 11 million doses of Sinopharm and Sinovac from China. Officials say a total of 20 million doses will be secured by August, while funding from Australia and the United States has enabled access to the COVAX facility and AstraZeneca vaccinations. Almost 18% of the population has been fully vaccinated, while a quarter of the 16.5 million population have received a single dose.
When one places Singapore in comparison to Cambodia, in terms of level of development, level of infrastructure, et cetera, it's truly remarkable that Cambodia has had this level of success in its all-of-government campaign to roll out vaccination as quickly as possible. The kingdom is well on track towards meeting its goals, and it's a story that has not received nearly the attention that it deserves.
Cambodia hopes to reach herd immunity with 10 million of its 16.5 million people vaccinated by the end of the year. And it wants to reopen its tourism industry in the fourth quarter to fully vaccinated tourists. Luke Hunt for VOA News, Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
Making headlines in Asia, authorities in the Philippines started evacuating thousands of people Thursday after the alert status was raised on a restive volcano that spewed a 1 kilometer high plume of gas and steam. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, House of Representatives Democrats voted to approve a special select committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol building after a bipartisan effort failed to get enough votes to pass earlier. International Edition host Steve Miller spoke with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson about it.
So, Catherine, where I want to begin is, what exactly does this select committee do, and how is it different than other committees? Because a criticism from Republicans is that there are other committees looking into the January 6th riot at the Capitol.
That's right. So we have a lot of different committees and commissions up in discussion on Capitol Hill who could be looking into the events of January 6th. What was created specifically today is what's called a select committee, which some may remember as the designation for the select committee on the events in Benghazi, which looked into former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's wide-ranging accusations against her from House Republicans, kind of a broad investigation that can be conducted by members of the U.S. House of Representatives. So basically today, what it is happening is that Speaker Pelosi is being empowered to select 13 members of the U.S. House, and she is supposed to consult with Republicans on 5 of those members, but ultimately she is able to decide who serves in those positions. Those 13 people are broadly empowered to call witnesses, to compel testimony, to get documents, basically to look into what Democrats call a domestic terrorism event when the supporters of Donald Trump rioted at the U.S. Capitol and attempted to overturn the counting of Electoral College votes for then-President-elect Joe Biden. So really a broad-ranging investigation here that was created today.
You brought up the Benghazi Select Committee, and I wanted to ask you about that because some Republicans have criticized the Democratic leadership in the House for creating this Select Committee. But when Republicans were in charge of the House, they created their own Select Committee for the Benghazi investigation. And I was wondering if House Republicans and Democrats commented about that, because these were both what the opposition would call partisan efforts.
Right, exactly. And that goes back to some of the other investigations that have already been going on in the U.S. House into the events of January 6th. You know, there are several committees of jurisdiction: House Homeland Security, House Judiciary, the House Oversight Committee, who are already empowered to look at bits and pieces of this problem, you know, looking at the security failures of that day, looking at some of the implications of having such a large domestic terrorism event. But really, when you step back, what each side is saying is that there either needs to be a broader investigation for a select committee, or this broad investigation is really too broad, which is what Republicans are saying. They're pointing to those previous investigations in each House committee and saying, look, all of this has already been looked at and examined. There is nothing new here. And that goes back to the debate over Benghazi, which, of course, Democrats said was far too broad, went on for far too long and was really what they called a witch hunt against Hillary Clinton.
Catherine, do we have any idea of when this committee is going to be up and running? Because lawmakers are about ready to leave for the July 4th Independence Day holiday.
Sure. Well, even the schedule for this committee has become a partisan issue because you have a lot of Republicans saying that it shouldn't go on for too long and go into 2022, of course, when there will be the start of the midterm election cycle, when all of these lawmakers have to run for reelection. Democrats have assured Republicans that that will not happen. But of course, when you look at the timeline in the U.S. House, as you mentioned, they're out for the 4th of July break. They're out for another 6 weeks starting in August. And there's a lot on their plate in terms of passing an infrastructure deal, passing a budget for the U.S. government. And Speaker Pelosi has to appoint those members and get them seated and up to speed to do the work of that committee.
Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent. She spoke with International Edition's Steve Miller. For the first time in a nearly week-long rescue effort, the remains of children have been recovered from the collapsed Miami-area condo tower. Associated Press correspondent Jackie Quinn has more.
The mayor of Miami-Dade County visibly moved as she announced the grim find of six more bodies.
Two of these were children, aged 4 and 10.
Adding to the already palpable grief, says Mayor Daniela Levine Cava.
The loss of our children is too great to bear.
The difficult search through rubble continues. Another federal team is coming, and crews will build a ramp to allow heavy equipment to come in. Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Chief Alan Kaminsky says it's treacherous for the crews, but they remain motivated.
It's over 200 hours, but there's 145 individuals still missing. So we're continuing to move forward and, do what we do.
Audio courtesy of WPLG-TV. I'm Jackie Quinn.
President Joe Biden met Wednesday with cabinet and emergency officials and remotely with Western governors to discuss the heat wave, wildfires, and drought in the West. Each poses a threat in different communities. And as VOA's Michael Sullivan reports, an Idaho rancher is trying to keep his farm alive despite a lack of water.
Amid record high heat, blamed for several deaths in Washington State and Western Canada, President Joe Biden conferred with officials and Western governors. Meanwhile, in Shoshone, Idaho, farmer and cattle rancher Carl Pendleton is feeling the effects of the changing climate. Pendleton also heads a company that operates an irrigation system. While some farmers have access to underground water, this system is the only source of water for his farm.
Well, we're in the bottom of the Richfield Canal. Normally this water, standing here, water would be at least up to my neck, maybe up to the top of my head.
But in places, it's bone dry after a winter with little rain or snow in the nearby mountains. Melting snow usually replenishes the water system in summer. This reservoir typically starts the season with more than 235 million cubic meters of water. It started with less than one quarter of that this year. It's the driest year in this water district since 1955. A meager alfalfa and grain crop means Pendleton's cattle won't have enough feed.
Why we've chosen rather than buy hay or truck cattle to some place where there is feed, why in my case we've decided to sell this livestock
and run a more limited operation than his family has done since they came here in the 1940s. Pendleton says the American farm system is diversified and resilient, but government, which provides agricultural subsidies, has a role to play where the food supply is threatened.
We certainly don't want to be welfare children out here. We'd rather get our money in the marketplace, but if you want to preserve our food supply, I think there's a necessary investment there.
A buffer for struggling small farms like his to stay in business. With Natasha Mozgovaya in Shoshone, Idaho, Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News in Los Angeles.
Thank you for being with us. Thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Chris Cascajo, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.